Okay, hi everybody, and welcome to our 43rd program on the introduction to the book Discipleship in the New Age. So, volume one, section one, and it's part nine, and in another few pages, section one ends. So this will have been for the Tibetan, what he calls his talks to disciples. I'm noticing the sun is coming in from one angle, so please excuse my half-and-half image here. Maybe we are all a little bit half-and-half. We're on page 96. And in this little segue, he's telling us to mind our own business. The pitfalls, he says, are many, and I tell you to beware. Be wary. Be watchful. But that word, may I say, beware, carries a certain connotation of a serious danger. He says here, attend to your own life and your own business. Speculate not as to the status of other disciples in my group, who are your close cooperators and co-sharers in my experiment. Of course, may I say that elsewhere he says it's quite a human thing to do, to speculate, but he does not want us to become overly interested in such matters, ignoring our own work and interfering with others. He goes on to say, cultivate the humility which is based on understanding and vision, and so serve the world, your fellow disciples, and serve me also as the major point of your contact with the hierarchy. We do remember what he's been talking about, humility as that adjusted sense of right proportion. And I think it takes a long time to develop that sense of proportion, but once it is, developed, then we have a chance truly to see and truly to understand. I'll just read that little part again. He talks about that adjusted sense of right proportion, which equips its possessor with a balanced point of view as to himself, his responsibilities, and his life work. This, when present, will enable him to view himself dispassionately, and his presented opportunities with equal dispassion. And may I say, as if from a distance, as if from the perspective of the soul, and without arousing the glamour-producing astral body. I would say that dispassion is a great thing to achieve, and there are just so many people who are filled with that kind of Martian tendency and are so utterly passionate about smaller things that they fall into glamour. So this that you see here is a very important a couple of sentences from the Tibetan. To achieve under Libra, I would say, and under Venus, that adjusted sense of right proportion which equips its possessor with a balanced point of view. May I say, when we talk about a balanced point of view, that's quintessentially Libran. A balanced point of view as to himself, his responsibilities, and his life work. And then he will be able to, as the Tibetan says, view himself dispassionately and his presented opportunities with equal dispassion. He knows he is something other than what he is viewing. So we're learning how to be humble in the right sense, in the spiritual sense, which is not the same thing as a kind of putting oneself down in false humility, but really thinking, in fact, behind it all, that one is doing quite well. Okay, so getting on then, with page 96, this being the 10th of September, well, when you hear this, it may be a long time since the event, but 20 years ago, the World Trade Center came down under a jihadist attack and certain murky circumstances which have not yet been entirely clarified. There is so much manipulation occurring that sometimes we hardly know how certain events arose and how they really took place. But one day the truth on all of these matters will emerge, and the doubts, the suspicions, which are only doubts and suspicions, will be relegated to their proper position, and those which actually contained an indication of truth will be seen as such. Now, D.K. goes on here, page 96. I have, he says, often pointed out that a disciple is known by his influence upon his environment, and an initiate by the wide scope of his world service. So he's, shall we say, taking the estimation of what is a disciple, what is an initiate, out into the world and seeing what really, excuse me, they do accomplish. How does it happen, he asks? How does it happen then that a few of you, not all, are not distinguished by such service and are of relatively small importance in world affairs? So here he does seem to be talking about status. And it will be an interesting response that he gives, because in many cases the people gathered around him would be unknown except for the fact that they are gathered around him in this important work that Alice Bailey has done for him. Well, okay, so DK goes on. Several things could explain this. First of all, a disciple may be called to work off certain karmic relationships, to fulfill certain obligations of very ancient origin, and thus clear the decks for more complete and uninterrupted service to humanity at a later date. May I say that these karmic relationships do apparently cause interruption, and they have to be tended to regardless of how a disciple might choose to learn and to serve otherwise. DK tells us this occurs quite frequently between the first and second initiations. Okay, so let us realize this is the time when a person becomes a true aspirant, an accepting disciple, and a pledged disciple, and perhaps sometime before the second initiation, an accepted disciple. It can last a long time, and the disciple may be quite unaware of how these karmic relationships originated, since they are of ancient origin. I'm sure that's the case for so many of us. Why am I related to this person, we might ask? And we don't necessarily trust our present wisdom in having become related, but oftentimes they are family relationships. So, but there are times when we wonder, why am I thus related? Why do I feel I must be related? And if they are of very ancient origin, well, DK keeps the time designator to himself there. How would we know? Okay. What else? What else? Why this apparently interrupted service? And he goes on to say, sometimes a disciple may be doing effective service upon the inner planes and on a large scale, and yet there may be no evidence of this upon the physical plane, except in the beauty of the life lived. Well, yes, it's a mysterious factor we're dealing with here. Things that must be done, but the outer plane does not see the reason. And when, I would say, a disciple can gather what is the reason for these apparent delays, then I would say a significant integration has been accomplished. Now, what other reasons might there be? DK goes on to say, others may be learning certain techniques of psychological relationships and of energy distribution, and may have dedicated some particular life to the acquiring of these esoteric sciences. May I say, I think we can see the reasons for being undistinguished on the outer plane are a number. They are numerous. So what we see of the disciple may not be the indication of what the disciple really is. Of course, one doesn't want to get a big head about that, as if to say to others, I'm really important, but you don't see how important I am because it doesn't show through on the outer plane for these reasons. None of us is, in the larger scheme of things, really important. we are tiny emanations of a great identity, which essentially we are. So we are, we can look at our identity in a couple of ways. One is very limited, and that's usually how we see ourselves. And the other is tremendously universally expansive. And so we hardly dare to look at ourselves in that deeper and higher sense. One life, and this is DK going on, and speaking as one who knows, speaking as one who lives in the soul triadal perspective, which is more than we who so often live in the personal perspective, can truly fathom. He says, one life is but a short moment in the long cycle of the soul. What is that cycle? Can we think of it as the moment of individualization and thus of entering the fourth kingdom of nature consciously, eventually, and then eventually of entering the fifth kingdom, the kingdom of souls. And in a way, then, of course, the long cycle of the soul goes on. And the true soul, we do remember, don't we, is the spiritual triad, which is analogous to the personality of the soul, only it's the personality of the monad. Well, we talk about these things so much. But the key is for them, that is, these things, to become a conscious, continuous realities in our incarnational life. And this is something that I said a little earlier, but DK is now saying it. The true disciple, okay, will never fall back on the reasons given above as alibis for lack of effort. Well, I guess we all have the tendency to retrogress, which we must learn to overcome. And it's very easy to fall back. Fall back, go ahead, maintain the status quo. Those seem to be the three options which are offered to us. So falling back would mean, as I said, I'm more important than I look, because I have accomplished much, but you don't see it for the following reasons, and here are the reasons. See, that term alibi is interesting. It's a term Alice Bailey uses quite a bit. And basically, in our modern language, it means to make excuses for non-performance. So we have to cut in ourselves the tendency to make excuses for not moving forward, either for treading water, that's static, or for actually falling back. Now that those options are really something that we have to tend to. We actually have to know what we are doing. He goes on to say, I would remind you that world influence alone does not always imply discipleship. Well, may I say, take a look at some of the politicians of a very selfish kind. Excuse me for a second, I have to. Yeah, reach for that water bottle. Getting a little bit raspy here. So he says, I would remind you that world influence alone does not always imply discipleship. Well, there will be for initiates, I would say, some degree of world influence. But not the kind of selfishness which often catapults a man, a woman, into prominence. I could name names, but you know my thoughts about selfishness in politics and selfishness in religious matters. He goes on to say, there are many groups well-known and magnetic which have at their center some dominant personality who is not necessarily a disciple. Well, DK is cautious. In a well-known group, there can be at its center a disciple, but not necessarily. So, fame, you know. What poet was it that said it was like a bubble? I wonder if Shakespeare was dealing with that, whatever Shakespeare, whoever Shakespeare may have been. So let's just say, and we could almost use it like a little mantra, that prominence is not necessarily discipleship. or even more so, an initiate status. And what can we gain out of all of this foregoing paragraph? Don't make excuses for non-effort or for not living up fully to your potentials. You know, the further you go with this book, the wiser it seems to be. Even in this section with talks to disciples, there would be enough for us really to create a solid foundation for our discipleship. So let us go on a little bit anyway. We don't cover a lot of pages, but we do look closely at what Master DK is trying to tell us, is telling us, and its relation to other parts of his teaching. So we have a lot of cross-referencing. Okay, so he says, in connection with this group of my disciples and with this experiment which I am undertaking, and please note that the masters speak wisely in terms of an experiment. Master DK doesn't know how it will work out. He didn't know at the time. I'm sure he had foresight to say it might work out this way, it might work out that way. But he's holding it with a degree of detachment and soul perspective. So he's saying to us, as he continues, you need to arrive at a point in group experience where you are not so intensely preoccupied with your own development, status, and service. Well, may I say it, this is fairly common. And I'm sure if we were in such groups as he assembled, we would be watchful over what we consider to be our development, our spiritual status, and the effectiveness of our service in the Master's eyes. So here comes, you know, this is more advice. He's telling us we need to arrive at a point where these intense preoccupations wane. He doesn't say that we should ignore our own development from a realistic point of view, or our status, which may tell us the initiation towards which we are working, and certainly not our service, but it's this intense preoccupation which has to be somewhat reduced. He goes on to say, you all need to learn to decentralize yourselves so that the work to be done becomes the factor of main importance. May I say, he seems to have repeated this idea in a number of ways and at a number of times. I'm going to read it again. You all need to learn to decentralize yourselves . Remember, that's the word that we apply to the personality. So that the work to be done becomes the main factor, or the factor of main importance. When this is the case, then the intense self-interest with some aspect of the personality expression, and may I interject here that the sixth ray is the ray of undue intensity, excessive intensity, somewhere he names it as such, because that kind of intensity can close off the avenues to higher vibration, to truth. So if the work to be done becomes the main factor, or the factor of main importance, then the intense self-interest with some aspect of personality expression, some weakness of character, some dear objective, or some physical condition will cease. This, again, may I say, now we're dealing with factors of major importance. He goes on to say, you will find the cultivation of a, quote, divine indifference, close quote, as I have told you several times, he says, of great assistance in forgetting the little self. Divine indifference to the affairs of the little self. He goes on, this frequently looms so large, that is, may I say, the little self looms so large from habits, that it shuts out the higher self. He goes on to say, it comes between the disciple and the master and prevents contact with his co-disciples, thus negating effective service. So I think he's saying here that when you can't work in group form with your co-disciples because you are shut off from them because of your excessive preoccupation with the little self, you are at the same time negating effectiveness in your service. So the word, the watchword, which is so helpful, in creating the right relation between soul and personality is decentralization. And we think of always the work. And then the other aspects of our interests, namely intense self-interest, begin to fade away. That's the issue that we are facing. In what, may I ask, are we intensely interested? You know, and in the scales, as it were, how much does intense preoccupation with our little self weigh against an equally intense or more intense interest in the great work and what we can do for enhancing that work? The things that are liable to catch us are these, well, personality weaknesses of which one becomes aware and of which, or in relation to which, one becomes almost obsessed. Some great goal, which he calls the dear objective, and that goal may be great for us, but what does it mean for the alignment of soul, mind, and brain? What does it mean for those things which actually must manifest? Or something else here, something that traps many, preoccupation more and more as the body gets older, preoccupation with their physical condition. So, just pause for a moment, ask yourself, how are you doing with the factor of divine indifference? See how important is the bigger picture to you? Important enough to prevent you from becoming trapped in relatively minor preoccupations, no matter how important they may seem to you at times. As we know, the further we go, the more the factor of self-forgetfulness in the lower sense must take hold. Now, it's also true that that type of self-forgetfulness is, in the higher sense, self-remembrance. The larger self is remembered. And I think it is not easy to pass through life in this higher state of self-remembrance, capital S. See, who are we really? And if we constantly are thinking of ourselves as this tiny emanation, we are forgetting our true origin. And that, of course, leads to all kinds of complications. Okay, there's a couple of more things here. And then I think we can call this shorter program adieu for the moment. We're very close. Just a few more programs, I would say. Till we reach page 102. Which is the end of this extremely valuable section that we call Talks to Disciples. Okay. DK says, there is one more point I would like to take up with you so that there may be complete understanding. Well, let us say, no matter what he tells us, it's a question of our absorption and application. Isn't it? But anyway, excuse me, we have the basis. And he says, there come periods in the life of the disciple when there appears to be no contact with the Master, and as if all relationship had been at least temporarily severed. And then he tells us, where accepted disciples are concerned, and may I add that so many of those who went into the new reorganized C group were considered accepted disciples. So he says, where accepted disciples are concerned, I would like to emphasize that any such severance is not possible. So what can we say? You know, it's a seeming. It's not a reality. DK tells us occultly, it cannot happen. and the Master's love for the disciple makes it again impossible. So we have to be really careful about contrasting seemings from facts. But I imagine this can be an uncomfortable period, and one can feel somewhat bereft. But then thought about who the Master is, what an accepted disciple really is, and how the Master works, and how the Master is trying to promote the attitude of independence in his disciples, would save us from any kind of uncomforts or discomforts or depression connected with this apparent severance of contact. He tells us it's just not possible. Occultly, it is not possible. It cannot happen. And the Master's love for his chela, again, makes it impossible. I guess the Masters try to train us to become Masters. And this, of course, means that we, along the way, have to master many things that it might be more comfortable to be advised upon by a Master. Do this, and it'll all work out. Do that, do this, do that. But as he tells us, the battle is our own. However, there's one more factor here that has to be taken into consideration. There is only one condition, he says, that can result in severance, and that is deliberate and conscious effort by the disciple carried over a very long period of time. I mean, not just a flicker, not just an impulse, but a deliberate orientation pursued. So there could be, and he'll tell us what it is, a deliberate and conscious effort by the disciple to bring it about. A Master does not lightly, says the Tibetan, admit a disciple to his group. And once having done so, the situation is irrevocable from the standpoint of the Master. I think we can look at the intense loyalty which the Master has to his accepted disciples. Any delay, Master DK says, any delay in progress and any final severance comes from the pupil. Okay, well, that's interesting. There may be temporary severances. Always watch out for his descriptors, his adjectives, because they give the sense of the time equation. Any delay in progress and any final severance, because after all, let me say, DK did have to recognize that some of his chelas had reached their high water mark, and it would not be a profit to incorporate them into the new reorganized C group of 24, which he perforce brought together at a time when the war was in an intense phase requiring his attention. So that is not a final severance. That was simply an acknowledgement that enough had been given in this life. It may have felt to the disciple not included, if they became aware of this other group, that it was a final severance, but not from the master's point of view. And DK goes on to say, there may be a temporary suspension of communication, and this may last throughout one life. And that is probably, you know, what happened for those who could not be included in that aspect of the advancing work. A temporary suspension of communication. That's no final severance. And this may last throughout one life. DK goes on, that, however, is not long from the angle of the soul. It is but a flash of small moment and significance in the long career of the soul. It looms as large and important in the personality life. The personality thinks of it as large and important, right? But, DK goes on, but may signify only the grasping of opportunity in the eternal now of the soul. So the soul perspective is entirely different, and the personality may agonize, as I think some of those closely related to DK did agonize when it appeared that he was going away and no longer taking care of them through Alice Bailey, etc. But as he said, speaking of the six or seven meditations in Discipleship Volume 2, I've given you enough to last you for the remainder of this incarnation. He was not abandoning them in any sense. It's just that other things had to be considered of more importance. Okay. There may be just a little more here, let's see, or not. Well, it looks like we'll leave this one for the next. But it is a wonderful summary, you know. I have therefore been near you, he says, and watched at intervals the tide of life roll over you. I have noted your progress and your delay. I have watched you succeed, and I have seen you fail. And think of it, all this from a considerable geographical distance. This I do through noting the pulsation of your light, he says, not in watching the detail of your daily life. Well, it's a good it's a summary section, and a good one. And I don't think that since I have very soon the Glamour broadcasts or Zoomcast, I don't think it pays to get into this. We have a little program of about an hour so far, roughly. So we are, it's interesting, isn't it, to think that you are under observation according to the pulsation of your light. And this oscillation is, I suppose, common to all disciples at first. So we're really on page 98, and we have begun here. Whoop. What have I done? Okay. This has been program 43. I sometimes wish it could go faster, but I'm at that stage in my life when I like to think as deeply as possible about everything that you may be receiving from me. So, you know, some of you listening to my earlier broadcasts, they sounded like a racetrack, and that's not the case anymore. And today is the 10th, and we've gone from 96 to 98. And our next will be program 44. We're still in section 9, and I can't tell you when it will be, but tomorrow's an important day when it comes to the social history of the United States with those attacks that brought down the World Trade Center, however that did happen, and that in a sense brought what's called jihad to the West. There is a great difficulty getting along among the various groups within humanity, and if the methods of discipleship could be adopted, accepted by more, then we would not have this extraordinary kind of conflict, which can be aided and abetted by the Lodge of Darkness, and is. But that will fade, and the peace for the symbolic 1,000 years in the New Age, the Aquarian Age, will supervene. And right now, people like yourself, myself, we're involved in preparing for that more peaceful, absorptive period that the Christ, as a Prince of Peace, the Prince of Peace, will help to bring to humanity in ways that we can barely conceive. So, we will wish you a successful absorption and application. Of this book so rich that how many percentage of what is given are we really absorbing and applying? Well, not so much, but it's there to be pondered. As DK says, ponder on this. This book meant to draw people toward the ashrams, into the ashrams, is available to us, even as it was to them who were gathered around DK as accepted disciples. So we'll get better and better at assimilation. That is what I judge to be the case, and next time we'll continue with page 98. We're only 4 pages from page 102, which is the end of this section 1. So, Tuya and I wish you love and many blessings, and all of the team, BL, Joe, Michael, Mikhail, Bob, and others who are so prominent at virtual conference time, we all wish you the very best in your ongoing attempt to become a true and useful disciple. And I'll naturally come back to this and be working on it with you as soon as may be possible for me. Okay. See you then before long.